Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm the host of Tales, Trails, and Taverns. In this show, Rob and I like to take an active approach by hiking out to haunted, creepy, and abandoned places. We love the adventure and discovering the dark history of the locations we visit. We release a new episode every Friday on Apple, Spotify, and Patreon, as well as bonus episodes on varying Tuesdays. But don't just take my word for it, we have great listeners who have left some awesome reviews.
Oh, I love adventure, but during those times when I can't get to the Outback, I like to listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns. Those boys dig deep into the dark history, and their first-hand experiences really delivers the excitement. This podcast is a beaut.
Back when I was the governor, I didn't have time to listen to podcasts. But now that I'm retired from politics, I can focus on my two passions, pumping iron and listening to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
It doesn't matter who we are. What matters is that we all listen to Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
I love listening to the podcast. Wait, what's a podcast again?
It's an audio show you listen to.
Oh, like on the radio?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. I love listening to Tulips and Tiddlywinks.
It's Tales, Trails, and Taverns.
And what do you do again?
Hike to scary places and drink beer.
Sounds terrifying. Okay, I like to listen to Terrifying Tea Time, but not on the radio.
Okay, thank you. You did great.
You're welcome. Say, you're kind of cute. Is there a Mrs. Tales, Trails, and Taverns?
Now you get it?
No actual celebrities or political figures have endorsed Tales, Trails, and Taverns. All the reviews you've heard were written, poorly, by the host, George Lennox, as well as the impersonations of celebrities, politicians, and movie characters. I meant no harm. Please don't sue me.
Welcome to the Dead Podcast. I'm your host, Desi, and on this podcast, I discuss all things spooky and weird, from ghosts, demons, religion, to folklore, urban legends, true crime, and all things paranormal, with some horror movie reviews sprinkled in. So join me on this spooky ride.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again this week and hearing our brutal and bizarre stories.
And hanging out with us to have a cocktail and get boozy together.
Yes. What are you going to be telling us about today, Mom?
I am going to be telling you about a not nice guy who killed his wife on their honeymoon. Mm. As well.
That's not good.
Nope. What are you going to be telling us about?
I'm going to be talking about Andrew Gosden.
I don't think I know that name.
It's a sad story, but to go with it, I have the Blue Train cocktail. To make the Blue Train cocktail, you need 2 ounces of gin, 3/4 ounce triple sec, 1/2 ounce of blue curacao, and 3/4 ounce lemon juice. Mix all the ingredients in a shaker and strain over ice. Let's give this a try.
Okay, here we go.
It's a nice shade of blue, I will say.
I know. I love anything that we make with blue curacao because of the color.
Yeah. That's okay.
It's
a little heavy on the liqueur.
Yeah, I would agree with
like
that.
Like that sweet flavor.
Yeah, I like sweet drinks, but I don't know. I need something else to cut in with this one. It's not fabulous.
Yeah. I mean,
this is not a finish to the bottom of the glass cocktail.
No. Mm-mm.
So.
Alrighty, let's talk about Andrew Gosden. Andrew was born on July 10th, 1993 to parents Kevin and Glennis Gosden. The family settled in Balmy, which is a suburb of Doncaster, South Yorkshire in the UK.
Okay.
His parents were fairly religious Anglican Christians. However, they kept their religion separate from their children to allow them to make their own decisions on religion. Andrew was known to his family as Roo and was described as a home bird, meaning he rarely left home, especially without informing anyone of his plans. Andrew had a 100% attendance rate at the Macaulay Catholic High School, as well as being in the Talented and Gifted program, which included the top 5% of the schools to offer additional learning programs on top of required curriculum. Andrew was expected to get straight A's in his GCSE exam, which I think is similar to the SAT test in America.
I'm not sure. I've heard that over and over again, and I don't know what it means. So maybe some of our British listeners can tell us what that means, because we don't. I always thought like there was like a pass-fail kind of thing based on like some British shows that I watch. So I don't know that it's an SAT, but I couldn't fucking tell you. I know it's a big deal.
No
over
idea.
There.
Andrew had a small, tight-knit group of friends that he primarily socialized with in school. His father described him as a smart kid, but had little to no street smarts, and he did not get worked up or moody. Andrew was 14, but he looked slightly younger due to his size. He wore glasses, he was deaf in his left ear, and had a double-ridged right ear, which would stand out when looking at ears. So, like, at the very top, there's, like, two lines, like, going vertical almost.
Okay.
Like, it's a very noticeable ear.
Okay.
Andrew was interested in video games and metal music, and when he lost his phone, he declined a replacement but proposed that his parents get him an Xbox instead of a phone so he could play games with his friends. On September 14th, 2007, Andrew woke up late for school, which was abnormal for Andrew. He then got ready for school and headed out the door. He was seen walking from his home to the park near his bus stop by a family friend. But that day, he decided to skip the bus stop and walk directly to an ATM nearby. Andrew pulled out $200 of the total $214 in his bank account and was seen walking back home with his money by neighbors' cameras instead of going to school and breaking his attendance record.
Oh, okay.
Once his parents had left for work and the coast was clear, he walked into his home and changed from his school uniform into a pair of black pants and a black Slipknot shirt. Andrew packed a bag, including his wallet, keys, and most importantly, the PSP. It was noted that he did not take a sweatshirt or the charger for his PSP or the $100 cash that he had saved up from his birthday. At 10:30 a.m., Andrew was seen leaving his house and heading to the Doncaster railway station, where he purchased a one-way train ticket to London, which cost $31.40. He declined the return ticket, which would have cost him an extra 50 cents. At 9:35, Andrew boarded his train to London, and around that time, the school called his parents to say that Andrew had missed his first period of the class, or first period of the day. But when the school called, they accidentally called the wrong family, leaving them a voice message.
Oh, okay. So his family didn't know he was gone.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Andrew was seen leaving the train station in London at around 11:15 a.m. When his parents returned home that night, they figured Andrew was playing video games or doing homework. But when they called him for dinner, they realized he wasn't home. They called several friends and family members to see if Andrew was there, but when they learned he wasn't there and hadn't been to school that day at all, the family called the police. Andrew's father and sister scouted the route to his school as well as other areas he liked to hang out, but became exceedingly worried when they couldn't find him. When police notified his parents that he took a one-way train ticket to London, it didn't raise a red flag for his parents since he had a few relatives in London, but after speaking with them, his father became worried since none of them had seen Andrew. Only hours after his disappearance, a missing persons poster was drafted and handed out in both towns. The police investigated the family and school computers to see if Andrew had agreed to meet up with someone online. However, Andrew didn't have an email or any online accounts. One theory was that he went to London to see a concert, but the only concert that matched his taste was a 30 Seconds to Mars concert. There were about 122 potential sightings of Andrew, however, none of them proved to be fruitful. A person matching Andrew's description was spotted sleeping in a park, but when they were wearing winter clothing, which Andrew didn't bring with him. So, okay. A little weird.
Well, maybe he could have bought it like a thrift shop or something, because he had cash with him, right?
Yeah, he had about $160 left over.
Okay.
After the train ticket. In November 2008, a man approached the police station and stated that he had information about Andrew. But they used an intercom system since it was later in the day. So when the deputy finally went out to greet the man, he was gone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. In 2009, his father made a post on social media to the gay community about his son, stating he didn't care about his sexuality. He just wanted his son home safe, but little to nothing came from this. In 2011, his family paid for a search of the Thames River, and one body was found, but it was not Andrew's.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
In June 2018, Andrew's family reported that someone reached out about an online conversation they had with someone with the username Andy Rue, who claimed that their boyfriend had left them and they need $200 to cover rent. And when the person offered to send the money, they stated they had no bank account because they ran away from home at 14.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
This was investigated, but no leads were produced.
Shit.
On January 2022, police received a tip and had two men arrested in connections to kidnapping and sex trafficking in this case, which included inappropriate images of children. However, this didn't provide any information about Andrew.
Shit.
The investigation on the men ended in 2023, providing no information on Andrew, leaving this case unsolved.
Unsolved.
Me either. It's just sad.
So he disappeared when he was 14?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's so many questions. I need answers. You don't have any answers, Declan.
There are no answers.
Boo. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Man. Well, I guess we'll go on to my story, because my story does have some answers. They're not great, but there's some answers. So Scott Roston is our guy in question today. He was born in 1951, and as an adult, he became a chiropractor.
Okay.
Not that that is super relevant, but everybody, if you look him up, a lot of people refer to him as Dr. Roston. It's because he's a chiropractor, but he didn't, that doesn't play any factor in it. So back off of chiropractor, people. He and his parents moved to Israel in 1978, where Rostin opened a clinic. I did see it was called an unlicensed clinic, so I don't know exactly what that means, but I know that every country has like rules about opening chiropractic clinics, and you've got to like follow those rules, and I guess maybe he didn't want to do that, so whatever. His life in Israel was full of intrigue. So it seems that he was like a pretty cool guy, and his neighbor was trying to convince him to marry his niece. So Rostin is approached by the neighbor. The neighbor's like, you should marry my niece. And he says, no, thank you. I don't want to do that. He declined the opportunity, which apparently angered his neighbor, and his neighbor was a made man with the mafia and arranged for Rostin to be arrested under false pretenses.
What country was he in again? Israel?
Israel.
I didn't realize there was an Israeli mafia.
Apparently there is.
Okay.
Who knew? Yeah. So apparently the neighbor was associated, like I said, with the mafia, and he didn't like that Rostin turned down the offer of marriage. So he made these false allegations and got him charged with assault. This occurred about a year after Rostin and his family, or his parents, moved to the country, and he found himself falsely arrested and in jail, and also a mental hospital for 2 months. He reported in that those facilities that he was drugged and tortured on a regular basis. And these events, eventually led him to write a book about his experiences called The Nightmare in Israel. In the book, he details his experiences, recounting the gross violations of human rights that had occurred to him. The book was published in 1987, although I did read that he paid the publisher to publish the book. So it's not like somebody came to him and said, wow, this is a really intriguing story, we want to publish it. I don't think there was a lot of self-publishing going on back then, because this is 1980s. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people self-publish now, but it's, I believe, a lot easier, you know, with ebooks and everything. So
yeah,
the book was published in 1987, but by that time, Rostin and his parents had relocated to Florida. In March 1987, Rostin was accosted outside of a mall by 2 men who stated, quote, Israel wants you, end quote, and they attempted to kidnap him.
That's weird.
Yes. However, thankfully, he was able to break free. He reported the incident to the police, and he explained the situation, telling them that he had shot one of the men during the attempted abduction before fleeing the scene in his own vehicle. So he was able to get away. Shortly after the incident, Rostin told the local newspaper, quote, Israel took its best shot, end quote. But apparently it wasn't a good enough shot, because he got away. You know, this untrained man in Florida got away from the Israeli mafia who were coming to get him.
Interesting. That's weird.
You look skeptical.
Yeah, it just sounds like a James Bond movie or something. The Israeli mafia?
Yep. Not long after the failed attempted kidnapping, Rostin was injured during a fall down some stairs. Although I didn't see anywhere that he blamed this on the Israeli mafia, but I wouldn't have put it past him if he had had the opportunity. For treatment of his injury, he started going to physical therapy, where his treatments included massage. The massage therapist that worked with Rostin was named Karen Waltz. She was petite, young, and attractive, and the two soon became a couple. The couple shared many of the same interests, both enjoying being physically active. Karen had long been interested in fitness, having been involved in ballet, tai chi, dance, and taking lengthy daily walks, like 10-mile walks a day or something like that. So there's a good amount of time dedicated to going on those walks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
10 miles is a long walk.
Yeah. That's like only, I mean, I love to walk, but 10 miles a day, I don't know about that.
A little That's too like much.
Only if my car broke down and I'm stranded. Am I walking that far on purpose? The couple had a fast romance and they were married in February of 1988. The honeymoon was a 7-day cruise to Mexico, leaving from Southern California. Unfortunately, on the last day of the cruise, a tragedy would occur, which is why we're talking about it in the brutal part of our show. In the early morning hours of, although this has a lot of bizarre shit too. I mean, Israeli mafia attacking somebody and yeah, okay. It gets better, by the way. In the early morning hours of February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day, Roston contacted authorities on the ship, explaining to them that his wife had fallen overboard. The couple had been running on the outdoor deck when a large gust of wind caused Karen to be blown off the side of the ship into the ocean below. However,
that's not good.
No, especially when you factor in the true things of that there had been no gusts of wind. The wind was only about 5 miles per hour and the seas were calm.
Sounds a little fishy.
Exactly. Which made the authorities skeptical of his description. So they questioned him further and he changed his statement a little bit. He now claimed that Karen had been blown overboard, that she had not been blown overboard by wind, but had fallen over the railing. Now, he said he tried to grab her and bring her back to the right side of the railing, but he had failed in his attempt. And then she fell into the ocean. However, I previously mentioned that she was petite. She was about 5'3" tall, which is my height. Although your dad likes to say that I have shrunk and I am actually only 5'2". I don't know the reality of that. We'll just leave that as a skeptical possible opinion of him. But around Karen was around 5'3". The railing height was 3.5 feet tall. So well over her waist, you know.
Yeah.
Is over half of her body size. Yeah, she would have had to have pole vaulted over that damn thing. So for her to fall over the railing, it didn't make any sense either. The ship's crew also noticed that Roston had some injuries and scratches to his face. When he was asked about how he got those marks, he said that he had hit his head on a control box that was on the gangway. And he pointed out the box, but the box was examined and there was no sign of blood, no hair found. There was nothing sharp, no edges on the box that would explain how Roston could have gotten those damages to his and injuries to his face.
Suspicious.
Again, yes, very. Karen's body was located later that day by the Coast Guard. Her body was floating on top of the water because air had been trapped in her clothing, which is very important. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Was she wearing garbage bags?
No, she was just wearing normal clothing, but because of how she fell, there was air trapped inside the clothing, which made her buoyant enough to stay on top. And again, the ocean was fairly calm, so she's not getting tossed around in deep waves or anything.
Yeah.
Examination of her body showed some interesting pieces of evidence. She had rubberized pieces of the jogging track embedded in her clothing as if she had been forcefully pushed against the track surface. So you've That's been weird. On cruise ships and you know how there's always that outdoor running deck, and it usually for safety reasons, there's like that grippy stuff that they paint on it so that
you don't fall off.
Exactly. Exactly. So some of that was embedded in her clothing. Also, her neck and eyes showed signs indicating that she had been strangled. Due to the presence of the air in her clothes and the physical signs of strangulation, it was determined that she had been choked until she was unconscious, and then her body was thrown overboard, which led to her drowning. If she had been conscious in the water, she would have tried to swim to save herself, and any attempt at swimming would have removed the air from her clothing, so she wouldn't have been found buoyant in the water.
So she was already dead.
Or unconscious and then succumbed to drowning. The running track itself was examined, and pieces of Karen's earrings and strands of her hair were found not far from the railing. Other passengers on the ship were questioned about their interactions with the couple. One passenger that had shared a table with them noted that Roston ridiculed Karen for what she had been eating. He was going after her because she was eating like desserts and things. Well, that's what you do when you're on a cruise, is you eat food. Sweets. And you eat until you feel like you're going to explode. That's what it's there for.
Yes.
Apparently also he was criticizing her for the utensils that she used during the meal, because there was a very elaborate setup of forks and spoons and things, and he was giving her shit about not using the right one, apparently.
She used a salad fork on the steak? Oh no.
I guess. Oh, tragedy.
How dare she?
Another passenger reported seeing Roston arguing with a woman outside about an hour before he reported his wife overboard. Roston was arrested and charged with second-degree murder. He soon came up with another explanation for what happened to Karen. What do you think that was, based on what we know about his history? Do you have any guess?
Something with the back.
No. He blamed it on Israel again.
Okay.
Yes. So he turned back to his time in Israel. He explained that the murder had been carried out by Israeli agents as retaliation for his book coming out the year before. He said that he saw two Israel men on the ship that must have been agents of the country where he had been tortured. And he claimed that they drugged him and then framed him for the murder of his wife.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sure. He believed this was all done to discredit him and his book, because it was such a scathing thing about all the things that happened to him. So they were like, we gotta make sure that nobody will believe this guy, so we're gonna kill his wife and frame him for it.
Jesus.
Right.
This guy's crazy.
For sure. This was his main defense during trial as well, which began a little over a year after Karen's death. Evidence was given by the defense team regarding the presence of two Israeli men during the cruise. The prosecution, though, didn't believe the story one bit. Good for them, because it's bullshit. One of their witnesses was one of the Israeli men on board the ship that day. He explained that he was not a secret agent for his country, and that he was a photographer. He and a friend had taken a trip to California, where he photographed the wedding of another friend. The two men also visited Disneyland and Universal Studios, because that's apparently what Israeli agents do when they're, you know, sent to California on a mission, but whatever. Yeah. They went to Disneyland and Universal Studios. Like anybody who is a tourist. Yes. Then after those little jaunts to the parks, they took their cruise to Mexico. The defense did not counter any of the medical evidence or testimonies from other passengers regarding the arguments witnessed. They just didn't, they were like, no, we're going all in on this Israeli agent's story. The jury was clearly not impressed with the international spy defense, and Rosten was found guilty of second-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison without parole. However, he appealed the conviction. The appeal was based on the idea that the judge should have instructed the jury that they could have convicted him of a lesser charge of manslaughter if sufficient evidence was presented that Rosten had been provoked to kill his wife. So now he's saying, yeah, okay, I killed her, but she provoked me to do it, and I should only be guilty of manslaughter because she used the wrong friggin' fork. And she was eating dessert. So she made me kill her. How dare she?
Jesus.
Absolute fucking crazy. The defense contended that the testimony from the other passengers regarding the arguments between the couple would indicate that he had been provoked to kill her. The appeal was denied. However, the conviction was upheld, but the sentencing was changed. So he was convicted of second degree murder, but he was basically sentenced for first degree murder, and you can't do that. The judge is not supposed to do that. You're supposed to have like a window of like, for second degree murder, you can get this kind of sentencing. For first degree murder, it's longer and you get this kind of sentencing. Well, the judge was pissed off about the whole case and how horrible this fucking husband was, that he sentenced him under first degree murder. And so they had to change it. So they reduced his sentence to 33 years instead of life. He did appeal it again, but it was upheld. And so he got to spend his full time. If he served the full 33 years, he would have been out by now and released. I don't know if he served the full 33 years or if he got out early. I have no idea. I tried looking it up, but I couldn't find it. So I would assume he's out. Yeah.
On the run from the mafia again.
Yep. Those damn Israeli mafia coming after you constantly.
Jesus. That's a weird story.
Very brutal and bizarre all in one.
Yes.
As was yours.
Do you have a chaser for us?
I do. This was from an article that I found on the Good News Network. I thought you might find this interesting because it is about insomnia and not being able to sleep. And there is some new technology that has been found. There's been a headband invented that is supposed to help you fall asleep faster. The theory behind it is that the headband emits a sound that causes the auditory cortex part of your brain to quiet the rest of your brain. So if you are somebody who can't shut your brain off to go to sleep, this might be a good option for you. That's kind of what they made it sound like. Not so much that if you wake up in the middle of the night and then you can't get back to sleep, maybe. I don't know. But It is available. You can like purchase it. If anyone is interested in reading the article or finding how to buy this thing, we will have a link in our sources for this episode and you can go find it. Or you can go to Good News Network and look for headband for sleeping.
That sounds interesting. I wonder how much it costs.
Yeah. I think if you buy it now, it was like $99, or you can wait and then it's like $350.
Why would you wait and spend more?
I don't know, but I think they're trying to like pre-sale, you know, get a lot of people
like find Kickstarter out almost or whatever.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting. I thought it was interesting. I never have a problem falling asleep right away. It's the when I wake up in the middle of the night, then I can't get back to sleep. Because then I start going, oh, down this rabbit hole and that rabbit hole. And yeah. So. Anyway, what chaser do you have today?
I have a watch recommendation on Netflix. It's Tim Dillon, the comedian, has a show that's like Dr. Phil style. Like he interviews weird people from around the country. And it's called Tim Dillon, This Is Your Country. And he just making fun of like just weird people in America.
Well, it's pretty funny. Not going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty funny little show, like a live studio audience and stuff. Like it's set up just like Dr. Phil.
I'm going to have to check it out. That sounds good.
It's pretty entertaining.
I like entertaining things. That would be good to laugh.
Yes. I think I need that sleep band. I'm yawning a lot today. Well,
sorry.
I think that brings us to the end of our episode today. Thanks for joining us again, everybody.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody. And another reminder, go leave us an Apple review so we can read it out at a future episode. Pretty please.
Or Spotify review.
Spotify doesn't have reviews. We do love the 5 stars.
And we've got
a lot of 5 stars on Spotify. So please keep those coming. But if you feel like telling us beautiful, nice things that you want us to read about ourselves, we're happy to read them on a future episode. So please do tell.
All right. I love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye. Bye. Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.